What's up, everyone? Eddie Mercado here with BloodyElbow.com, and I'm about to speak with Seattle's own superhero, Phoenix Jones. And he's about to be taking on his own brother, Carlos Fodor, at World Series of Fighting 32 on July 30th. So let's give him a call and see exactly how this fight came up and, you know, what his thoughts are on fighting his own brother, and is he prepared to do what he has to do?
Hello, sir.
Mr. Phoenix Jones.
How you doing?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, hey, I appreciate you taking out the time. I'm sure you're a very, very busy man between patrolling the streets of Seattle and getting your training in for your upcoming World Series of Fighting 32 bout against your own brother, Carlos Fodor. You know, how did the superhero thing, you know, how is that going? I mean, are you still patrolling? Are you still, you kind of chill out on that while you're getting ready for the fights?
Well, when you patrol, you have different rules. Like, everyone on the team does kind of different. You know, we label it 1 through 4, which is basic ranger tactics, where, like, the first person will take the person, take the insertion on head off, right? So the first guy goes into the danger. Second guy makes sure that number two doesn't get swarmed from any angles. The third person dials 911 or in ranger, goes for backup. The fourth person is overwatch, make sure no one's coming in from any side shots on all the three people inside. People don't even normally see the fourth person. We don't have them in the suit. They're normally just across the street with a taser or within range to kind of take the situation down. I'm normally number one, so when the fight comes up, you know, about 6 weeks before a fight, I move to number two. About 3 weeks before a fight, I move to number three, and then at four, you know, right where I'm at now, I'm not even two anymore. I'm across the street with a taser, you know, drinking a coffee, pretending like I'm not bald.
Okay, so you you rotate which position you are in due to whatever is least likely to encounter a situation or a problem or injury, I guess.
Exactly. The guy who goes in number one, he has the biggest job, because whatever weapon number one holds, the rest of the crew holds. So if number one walks in, the guy pulls the knife, I draw my taser. All three of the other guys then immediately draw their tasers. So you got to be on point, and the other guy is going to have the most contact with people.
Okay. Hey, Phoenix, can you move a little bit closer to the microphone?
Yes, sir. How we doing? We better?
Oh, that's so much better. So much better. Thank you. Thank you. Now, who is Rex Velvet? What is this? Who is this guy, Rex Velvet? He claims to be a supervillain, and he's calling you out. Who's this guy?
Man, this was really funny, actually. So this guy is actually a video producer and, like, a wedding photographer. And he came out, and, like, our city had a big riot 1 year. And he came out and, like, sent it to all the news media and, like, claimed responsibility for this riot. And no one was sure if it was a joke or serious, because the riot was done by anarchists that came out of nowhere. This guy had this, like, video. It was weird. We weren't sure what was up. So I did a little bit of research, found out who he was, and, like, basically went to his house and was going to beat the shit out of him. And he came out and was, like, super not having it. And was just like, I'm a wedding photographer. It was supposed to be a joke. And I was like, oh, I'm out of here. He's like, but I'm making this vodka. If you want to help me sell vodka, I'm like, nah, I'm cool. And after that, he just made a whole bunch of videos, like, saying how much I sucked that I wouldn't help him peddle his, like, cheap vodka.
That's only in Seattle.
Yeah, it was weird. There are some real supervillains, but they always get caught really quickly. Like, it's hard to walk around in a suit and do bad shit and get away with it. You know what I mean?
Right. You're a little, you kind of stick out a little bit like a sore thumb.
Okay. Yeah, like, we had Arsonic with this guy who used to light stuff on light buildings on fire. Mm-hmm. But he wore a bowling shirt with flames on the bottom and had, like, straight up a can of gas and matches. So, like, I saw this guy running down the street with a flame shirt on, a can of gas and matches, and I called the cops. They found him in, like, 5 minutes. I mean, I didn't even chase him. I just went and put the fire out.
Okay. Now, is the suit comfortable? Like, are you comfortable in that thing?
No. Absolutely not, no. The worst part about it is the underpiece. The underpiece is, the suit goes in layers, right? So the outer layer, the part that you see, the rubber-looking part, is made out of D3O, which is a material that gets harder when you hit it. It's kind of weird. It's like a liquid, but when you hit it, it turns into a solid.
Okay.
Now, and it's like encapsulated.
Is it waterproof? I know it rains a lot in Seattle.
It's sort of like this. Going from inside to outside, right? The underpiece is a fire retardant Nomex bodysuit, right? The same stuff like NASCAR people wear for their car driving, right?
Okay.
So that thing is not particularly waterproof, but it takes a lot of water to feel it. Once it gets in though, it's not coming out, so it sucks. Like it'd basically be like walking around and like you feel like you're in a bathtub. Then on top of that, there's the bulletproofing, the actual Kevlar, which is sitting in little pockets sporadically across the whole chest piece and kind of sectioned out. That's sitting in little plates. Then on top of that, you've got your hard armor, like the SAP plate that stops like rifle rounds and stuff like that. And I've got options where I put those in. I can put a lot of them in or less of them in. And that changes the weight too because they're really heavy.
Okay.
Then on top of that, you've got the rubber suit. So by the time the water actually gets to you, you've been drenched. Like when you start to feel water, you've been out there for hours.
Okay. So is during inclement weather the best time to commit crime in Seattle, you would say? Because Phoenix Jones is less likely to be patrolling?
You know, the best time to commit crime in Seattle, honestly, is when it's snowing.
When it's snowing?
Yeah, because our police force doesn't do walkarounds during the snow.
Okay. Do you patrol in the snow?
Yeah, I don't actually. Normally what I do is I rent like a snowplow and I drive around and I pull people out of ditches and stuff. I think it's kind of funny.
Okay, awesome. That's pretty cool. So,
yeah,
it's interesting. This MMA thing, I mean, how did you get into MMA? Did your brother Carlos get you into it, or did you kind of find it on your own?
You know, a little bit of both, man. Carlos was doing MMA when I started, he was. But we go in waves. We didn't get along a lot back then, like, at all. So he told me he was training to do some fighting, but I didn't even know what that was. Like, I didn't know what he was talking about. So I started at Northwest Jiu-Jitsu. And I was like, when do we get to punch people? They're like, never. I was like, this isn't really my thing. when do I get to hit somebody? And then I moved up to Charlie's Combat Club. That's when I started actually training.
Okay. So you said you guys weren't really close growing up. I mean, what was that relationship like? I mean, how exactly close were you?
Man, so like... Basically 12 to 18, we probably didn't talk at all. Like, maybe, you know, less than an hour's worth of talk from all those years, I would say. We really just did not get along, didn't like each other, none of that. Then he went to Iraq, and while he was gone, you know, I came into my own and had, like, my own friends, and, you know, was doing my own thing. So when he came back, I found him less, like, threatening. You know, like he was less annoying. We became kind of close at that point for a little bit, and then you know, time progressed and we weren't really close at all. And then at about 23, my coach and I were in a fight. We were in a fight inside the SFL Super Fight League America, and I was just getting killed. I mean, this guy was just whooping my ass, and. My coach is like, we got to throw the towel in. We got to get out of here. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like, that's not how this is going to go down. He's like, I can't watch you take this kind of damage. You know, I'm leaving. And I'm like, you're fucking leaving? He's like, yeah, I'm leaving. And he just got up and walked out.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like in the corner by myself. I was like, shit. So the bell rang for round three. It was a 5-round title fight. You know, I went out there and I was down 3-0. I ended up pushing a 10-8 round. For the last round, making it a draw, but it was a tough fight. And I went back in the locker room, and no one was there. And my brother came back, and he helped me take my gloves off, and he was like, "You know, I know we've had our issues, but you got to come to AMC, come train with us. This shit would never happen to you up there, man." And for the next couple of years, I would say we were like best friends, like coolest guy around. Like I liked him for a long time, you know.
Okay. Now, when you were little. I mean, obviously, you would get into fights. Who would win the majority of them? Would he win them because he was the older brother, or was it kind of even?
Man, he would win the fights, but I would always get him back. Like the problem was that my escalation level is always higher than his. Like he might beat me up or something like. Good example. He beat me up in the kitchen one time, and thought it was funny. He kept trying to push me in the fridge and shut the door because our fridge was like a big one with no shelves. So he kept trying to stick me in the fridge. So he finally stuck me in the fridge and thought it was funny. About an hour later, he's standing in the living room, and I charged him and knocked him through a two-story window. Went out the window with him onto the ground outside. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
So it's like, yeah, you may have won the fight, but you got thrown out a window.
Okay, so you ended up going to train with him at AMC, and you know, you made it to the World Series.
We trained together like every day for 2 years.
Yeah, you made it to the World Series of Fighting, and in your last fight against Roberto Young, very exciting fight, by the way. You won by a leg scissor choke, which we really do not see in professional MMA all too often. At least I know I haven't. And I mean, this is like a jiu-jitsu white belt move that you learn in like Gracie combatives. You know, it's you know, what was going on? What made you like go for that move? Such a high risk, you know, low percentage move.
Have a pretty good percentage of that move. I have 5 neck scissor submissions. I have 3 as an amateur, 1 for an amateur title, 1 as a pro. I guess you didn't tap that. No, I had 1 locked in, but the bell rang. So I guess I have 4. I have 4 submissions that way.
Okay. So that's kind of like your go-to.
It's one of my go-to moves. Because the problem that people don't, the reason people don't understand it is because they don't set it up correctly. They get in there and they try to neck scissor without kimuraing. But what you do is you put the kimura in, or the Americana, either way. And when you try to go for that move, so how people defend it is they'll pull their arm, which leaves their head up in the air.
Right.
Then you X your feet underneath their head, and you're not squeezing your thighs together. You're closing the X like a pair of scissors.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's the difference. So if people put their legs on both sides and have no arm, they're just squeezing their thighs against your carotid. And if you tap to that, you're an idiot.
Right. Yeah. I saw a video of Henner Gracie explaining it, how it's more of like extending your legs out as opposed to trying to pinch them together. And that's really how you shut off the blood.
But, absolutely. And they have no arm to defend. Because one arm is pinned on under their side, and the other arm is stopped in a kimura lock. Or they have their hands locked together and are afraid to let go, because when they know when they let go, you're going to crank the kimura.
Yeah, that was very impressive. I was very impressed with it. Now,
I was impressed about with that guy.
What's that?
How hard that dude hit.
Oh, yeah, he's got some boxing experience. He's no joke.
No, like, I didn't know it was going to be like it was life and death. Like, I can't explain to you, like, I've been hit before hard, but not the shots that just, like, feel like little explosions on the outside of your face. Like, people who hit hard normally, like, drop, like, I feel like the pressure goes into your body. Like, you feel it, like, sinking in. This was like, pop, 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 like these, like, little explosions on my face. It wasn't good.
Yeah, he's definitely a hard hitter. So how did the fight with your brother even come to be? Did the World Series of Fighting approach you? Or did you guys get together and say, hey, let's go make this happen?
Well, Kittle's kind of an asshole. So, which is, you know, a part of our issue is actually this fight. It's part of the reason we're not even talking. Because we talked about it when we went to World Series. You know, I said, hey, I want to get you signed here. This race stuff was great. You'll like the league. Let's do this. He was like, I'm excited. He goes, you know, if we sign, they're going to want us to fight each other. I said, well, you know, we should hold out for that, make sure there's a lot of money involved, and then, you know, it's between me and you, we're going to be brothers, it's all good, but let's talk about it when we get there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we left it at. Then I get a call from Steffo, and Steffo's all like, so, I know you guys have been talking about fighting each other, your brother has already signed, he's down to go for the contract, they'll send you a contract over, and I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Oh,
he's like, yeah, Matt Hume, they already talked about it. So I call Carlos, and I'm like, hey, you know, what is this? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we've been talking about the fight, you know. Take a look at the contract they sent you, you know, I already signed. And I'm just kind of like, we didn't, you know, where's this out of nowhere? We didn't discuss this, none of this. So I look at it, and the contract seems to be okay, and, you know, everything seems to be all right. So I call, and I'm like, we're going to be good, though, right? Like, we're okay. And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's just a fight. We're okay. And I'm like, cool. You know, then I overhear him talking to his friends about how he just lost his last fight in the World Series, so he's looking for, like, a gimme fight, and he thinks that I'm a gimme fight, and he's getting paid extra money for it, and he needs the win bonus, and I'm just kind of like, what are you talking about? I'm a give me fight. And he was just being a dick. And then I come to the gym and I find out that I can't even train AMC anymore because, it makes a conflict of interest to be training at the same gym as him. Now I don't have a gym to train at. I'm not taking my training partner for the last couple of years is no longer my training partner. I'm talking about how it's a fucking give me fight. And he's all not talking to me. And I'm like, fuck it. If you want to come at me like that, then fuck you. I'm going to take you out. Like, I thought we were cool, but apparently all this has been some fucking show for you so you can act like a dick and try to take advantage of our friendship. So fuck you.
Okay, wow. So you can't even, you're not training together for this fight against each other.
We're not talking. We haven't said a word to each other since the text message exchange like 6 weeks ago. We go see my mom's family. I text before I go over so he knows I'm going. We don't run into each other. We don't talk to each other. I might hit him if I just see him. I'm hoping I don't hit him at the weigh in to get disqualified.
Okay. You know, because there's a lot of people are worried about how much, you know, on the up and up this is going to be. Because sure, it would be easy for you guys to just script a quick early submission or something like that, get your checks and, you know, carry on. You know, so, you know, are you prepared to potentially knock out your own brother or, for, you know, snap one of his limbs?
It's such a weird question because when I knew we would be okay, I feel like it would have been easier. I know I sound weird to people, like, I know people like don't understand exactly, but I thought that we were going to be okay. Like, I thought we were going to be good. I thought this was just any other fight. We're going to train together for it. We're going to go in there. We're going to see what happens. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So when that was the case, of course, you know, you break his arm, we'll go home, we laugh about it, I'll take him to the doctor, we're good. You know, or whatever. Like, it just would have been fine. But now that I know that we're not fine, and we're not good, and it's not going to be like the same, now it's a different kind of thing in my brain. Now I'm like, I'm really angry, but I'm also really conflicted because I know what it feels like to lose, and it sucks that he's going to have to experience that, and I feel bad for him. Whereas before, I felt like it more would have just been a celebration of both of us making it to a higher plane in our life and being able to compete against each other, you know?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, I'm not going to lose. It's just that simple. And if it's going to be me or him, it's going to have to be him. I hope he doesn't get hurt. But if I see something that can be broken, I'm going to break it because that's my job.
I mean, we've seen brothers such as Joe Lozon and Dan Lozon. I mean, they fought in the front yard for free. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have the Diaz brothers, Nate and Nick, who they would not fight each other. Of course, they train and spar together, but they would never fight each other for money. So, I mean, you know, we've seen this before, and it's really a case-by-case basis. You know, each situation's a little bit different. The dichotomy's a little bit different between the brothers. And, you know, we've also seen relationships get destroyed by fights. So, I mean, I hope that that's not the case here.
I think that's pretty much the case. I mean, it's like when you work with someone every single day for 2 years, they help you train for the most important fights of your life. You know, they're there with you, you know, all the time. And then they just basically turn their back on you for a paycheck. There's not really a way to fix that. I mean, even in the future, if he says, you know, that was cold, I'm sorry, you still are that kind of person. Like, that's still your character. You're still a fucked up person. Like, I don't know if there's a way to fix that. Like, the shit that I do wrong, it doesn't come from being a faulty person. It just comes from lack of understanding of the situation. Like, I'm never out there trying to, like, actually do something wrong to my brother. It just might happen situationally. Whereas this, I feel like, was a setup, you know?
Right, right. What does your mom think of all this? I mean, I assume she's trying to be neutral, but what are her thoughts about all of this?
My mom's funny. She's actually not so neutral. She doesn't like it at all. She doesn't want the fight to happen at all. She's super, like, just disappointed that we actually said couldn't be adults about this. But she gave us two completely different, you know, advices. She asked Kara if it was really, you know, if this fight was really worth our friendship to Kara. You know?
Right.
And to me, she told me, if I get the opportunity to really hurt him, please don't do it. And she said it to us both, we were both there, and I kinda asked him, like, why would you tell Kara does he really want to ruin our friendship and tell me, you know, not to hurt him? And she's like, you're meaner than he is. She's like, you're really hurt. Like, you're really offended. You're really hurt. Whereas Carol looks at this like a business move. She's like, so you're gonna go in there in two completely different ways. She's just, she knows me. She's like, you're really hurt and really offended. I know what that looks like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the WSOF 32 is gonna be in your hometown, basically. So is she gonna be in attendance for this?
She's not going. Yeah, my mom's not going. I've tried to talk her into it. She's got tickets, but she made it pretty clear she's not going. She says no matter what, she loses.
Okay. Well, I mean, what do you think the holidays are going to be like after this? Like, what's Thanksgiving going to be like and Christmas? And
you know, I don't know. We had some birthdays in between, you know, in between the signing. I had my birthday party and stuff like that. And, you know, he just knew flat out he wasn't invited. You know, like, you're just not invited. So for Christmas, you know, I guess it really depends. I don't know. I can't be in the same room with him right now, so I don't know. But, I mean, my brother doesn't have a girlfriend and doesn't really have, you know, any other stuff going on. So if it's a holiday where my girl's got something going on, I'll probably go celebrate with her family and let Carol see what he does.
Okay. So after this fight, what's in it for Phoenix Jones? Like, what are your goals and aspirations for MMA?
Yeah, you know, I don't really know. Like, MMA is a weird thing because the more I learn, the more I feel like, the more I know, the more less confident I become, which is weird. But, like, the more fights I have, the more I'm out there, the more I realize, the more I know, the more I realize the kind of holes that are in my game. And the more I want to be in the gym training, and the less I want to be actually fighting, which is really weird. So I don't know. I feel like the World Series, I feel like after I beat Carol, I want a top 10 guy. And then I just want to see what's up. I want to know where I'm at. And then if I beat that guy, I want a shot at the belt. I don't think I necessarily deserve that, but I think the storyline makes sense. And sometimes life isn't about what you deserve, it's about what you get. And I just want to see it. And if I get a world title, I think that's what I want. I think I just want to know. Even if I just get in there and get a title fight and get fucking murked, at least we know where I stand. Because to this point, no one's really beaten me. Emmanuel Waylo laid on me forever, but I mean, he didn't even hurt me. Like, I was not injured. I wasn't submitted. I've never been stopped in my entire career of like 35 fights.
Right.
I just want someone to put my off.
So this fight is going to be at a catch weight of 162. Are you going to go back up after that, or are you going to move down?
You know, I don't know. I'm having a hard weight issue because, like, my weight class doesn't exist. You know, if I could pick a perfect weight class, it would be 162 because 170 is like too big, and I can get to 170 easily. Like, I don't even have to sauna. I could just, you know, diet to 170. But any lower, I can get to like maybe 150 before I start having some real issues. That last 5 pounds to get to 55 is just super fucking tough. Just doesn't come off. So I wish there was a 160 MMA weight class.
Okay, you know? Maybe you can create one, the Phoenix Jones weight class.
Yeah, just have some own ridiculous weight classes that go up like every 3 pounds like boxing.
It is possible.
That'd be fun.
So do you have a prediction for this fight? How do you see it going down?
I feel like I'm going to be losing a lot of this fight. I feel like I'll be losing a lot of because Charles comes out really hard, and he has a lot of grinding against the cage, a lot of knees, a lot of elbows against the cage. I feel like I'm going to be getting grinded out most of this fight, but he doesn't have a great chin, and he doesn't keep his hands up all that well. He's very linear, so I will catch. I'll put him to sleep, hopefully, or at least stagger him and get the ref to stop it. But until then, I'm going to be absorbing copious amounts of damage. There's no way around it. He's just cleaner than I am everywhere. This is going to be a fight just about how tough I am, how tough I can be, and how much I can take before he gets caught, you know?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm intrigued. I have no idea how it's going to go down. And I really hope you guys are friends afterwards. That's the bottom line.
I heard I'm an 8-1 underdog, so I wish I could bet on myself. Like, I feel like I've got better odds than 8-1.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know there were odds out for that yet.
That's what I heard. I heard 8-1. I was like, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that is pretty bad. You got any sponsors you want to thank or shout out?
Oh, yeah. I want to thank Lucky Strike, Epic Smoothie, my new fight team, Fight House, and Everett. Those guys are awesome. I want to thank Balls Energy. I want to thank Red Hook, which is a big sponsorship deal. I got a national Red Hook campaign. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, man. That's pretty much all my guys right now.
Awesome. Ben Fodor, a.k.a. Phoenix Jones, thank you for taking the time out to speak with me. You can catch him at the World Series of Fighting 32 on July 30th, fighting his own brother, Carlos Fodor. And I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon. Best of luck to you.
Hey, thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. So there it is. Phoenix Jones, Seattle's own superhero, fighting his own brother in Washington. Go check it out. He says he's an 8-1 underdog. We'll see. Till then, I'm Eddie Mercado. Find me on Twitter at TheEddieMercado.